Hello and welcome to episode the 249th of the Internet's one and only comics podcast. I hope I got that number right because I just looked at the numbers and then I closed the page before I said
ding,
it.
Ding, 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 ding.
I feel like I might have forgotten. I think it's the 249th episode at this point. Who cares what the number is? I'm your host, Jean-Luc. And it's a boys club this week. It's me and the classics. Chad and Alex are here. It's Emily's birthday weekend, so she's up to some debauchery somewhere, no doubt. But Chad, Alex, hello. How's it going?
So
hello.
I sort of take issue with the fact that you say that the numbers don't count when we have a very special 250th episode next week. But
well, that's true. I guess it is. This was like one of the worst episodes for me to say that line because we have the 250th episode next week and we're doing not a normal show for the 250th episode. We'll talk about that probably towards the end of this episode. So
yeah.
Stick around and figure out what we're doing next week. We will probably not talk about comics next week. Fortunately, this week there are plenty of comics to talk about. But before we get into all that, how have y'all been doing these past few weeks, but
do you want like a summary of our last few weeks? Is this like, haven't listened to the shows?
The thing is, I get a weekly summary anyway, so like, if you said things that you've done in the last few weeks, I would have already known them. So if you want to keep it to this week,
I had like a life and death situation today, like metaphorically. I wasn't in any actual danger.
I love that intro, Chad. I just gotta say, like the stakes are high and then they're not high, but yeah, I'm still intrigued. Yeah. So
me and my brother are going for a walk, and these two kids are playing with a frisbee. They're like 6'7". And one misses it, and frisbee goes into
Wait, sorry. 6'7"?
No, 6 or 7.
Okay, good. Sorry. All right, continue.
And so the frisbee goes into the street, basically right next to me, and they're looking at us like, hey, someone should throw that back. So I picked it up. And I was like, I can either fuck this up really bad and look like an idiot in front of these two children and then crush their belief that adults know what they're doing. Damn. Or I can throw the frisbee back and I'll be like that cool guy with a skateboard. I did a mixture of both where I got it over the street and in the general direction. The kid had to run a bit to catch it, so I wasn't like right at him. But I didn't totally fuck up the throw, and I was very proud of myself because I don't know if you've ever met me. I can't throw.
When that kid is doing their valedictorian speech at Harvard University for rich people, they're going to be like, you know, I didn't have a great childhood, but one day I threw a frisbee across the street, and I wasn't allowed to cross the street, so I thought, hey, my frisbee's gone, and the kindest, most handsome stranger picked up that frisbee and tossed it back to me, and he didn't toss it right at me, because life doesn't come right to you. I had to run to it, but I caught that frisbee, and now standing in front of all of you, I can clearly say that we've all caught that frisbee and we're going to do great things. And that's all because of that moment, Chad. That's wonderful.
That what you just did there was amazing, Alex. This is why we're friends.
Aw, I'm happy we're friends.
Have you ever been on VR chat, you prick?
It's a matter of me forgetting, but also like it's Sunday and it's like an hour difference and I got to get up at 7 for work the next day.
Oh, yeah, but that'll do it.
But I do love doing VR chat with everybody there. And happy birthday, Emily. I know we already said it, but like, happy birthday. I hope you listen to this show because Jean-Luc is going to sing happy birthday right now. John.
No, I'm not going to do that.
I was going to say no one wants him to do that.
You would be.
All right. We'll do it together. All right. All right. Happy birthday to you. Together, guys. Yeah.
No.
All right. Well, that's it. Your gift is we're not going to sing the full happy birthday song, so.
That's the best gift we can give her, let's be honest.
It's true. Yeah. I know she'll listen to this, and I wouldn't want to put her through me singing happy birthday. Off tune, so.
I will say on my birthday, I would like you guys to sing happy birthday.
Yeah.
Oh, guess what you're not getting as a gift.
That's not going to happen.
Damn, well, when I'm graduating from Harvard, maybe my speech would include that nice birthday thing, so it's fine.
When you go back to Harvard for your...
Yeah. Years. Yeah, you know, sometimes you gotta do a victory lap.
Your master's in posting on about video games accounts on social media.
Yeah. That's, it's...
That was a rough sentence to get out. Holy shit.
you can get a master's in marketing.
That's true. Saved by Jean-Luc.
Thanks, Jean-Luc.
Or journalism, I don't know.
I don't recommend. Well,
getting a master's in journalism. That's just a funny thought to me.
Yeah, I had a teacher who, was teaching me journalism, and she got her master's in journalism, and she spent a whole class, like, you know, full 2 hours and 45 minutes just telling us why you should not get a master's in journalism. And it was like, oh, okay.
That's probably good advice. Yeah, it seems like
I mean,
journalism isn't a real career or anything, but it does seem like a good way to throw away money.
Well, I mean, not every journalism is comics journalism, but, you know, they strive to reach there. But yeah, it's mostly a reason of, like, you need to be, like, have connections and, like, get out there. And if you're taking, like, I don't know, 3 or 4 years to, like, do your master's or, like, a year or whatever, it, like, kind of slows you down in the grand scheme. And you're also paying money, so.
Yeah, I don't like paying money.
No, I don't either. Not a fan.
So I bought a house.
Really? Another one. Chad, you are collecting houses. Damn, a real...
Chad's getting in the market right before the crash with a second house purchase.
So, do you really think a crash is coming, or do you think we're just never going to be able to buy homes?
Huh? Oh, well, I don't want to talk about the market.
there are a lot of
signs that indicate we're headed into another.
The problem is people are paying them, though, at least in my area.
Well, no. Yes and no. The problem is that the housing market is built on people indebting themselves, which means that it's always ripe to crash. The mechanics of it are obviously way more complicated. Like, the actual mechanics of it are obviously way more complicated than that.
Like an RTS.
Yay! Yeah,
exactly.
I'm bad about video games.
This is why I don't talk about my week, and why I ask you guys to talk about your weeks, because my week is mostly spent reading articles that make me depressed and sad. So you guys do the fun stuff during the week, like, I don't know, watching anime or whatever.
Oh, Chad, you want to talk about Naruto?
Yeah, we can talk about Naruto.
Okay, I mean, I only saw one episode this week, but I'm still liking Naruto. It's a fun show. We got that signing lady, and now she's gonna be the fifth Hokage. She's coming all in, and she's got a bit of a temper, a bit of gambling problem, but she seems fun.
I remember her, but I don't remember her.
And then there's the pervy sage. So, yeah, yep. That's Naruto. Yeah.
I remember him.
Yeah. That's all I got. I mean, I bought Naruto shoes before I'd even seen an episode of Naruto, because they were like, oh, those are cool looking shoes. And then I was like, well, I have the shoes. I should watch the program, I guess. So, yeah, anime be good. But what else have you guys been up to this week other than me watching Naruto?
I got my first COVID shot.
Yay!
There's not much to say about that other than I did it. The nurse who gave me the shot was pretty fun, though. Like, she was in a good mood and apparently had been doing it all day for the last, like, couple weeks. Which is good. That means people are going to getting shots. But yeah, it was fine. My arm was sore for like a day afterwards. I didn't feel very good, but I might have been hungover. It's hard to tell.
Could be a nice combination. Or maybe that's the hangover cure. Just get yourself a nice Pfizer shot.
Yeah, I swear, like, when I was seeing the 60 Minutes stuff, like, and they were having footage of people getting those vaccines, like, it looked like they shoved that needle really far down in there. So I was kind of expecting it to hurt like a bitch. And it didn't. It was just like any other shot. And I was like, hey, this is cool. Also, I'm glad I didn't have to go in that far, because I have really tiny-ass arms, and you'd have struck bone.
When you've hit bone, you know you've gotten the vaccine. That's good.
So that was cool. That's probably the biggest event that happened in my week. I started watching another anime.
Damn.
Called The Sound of the Sky. And it's very much a K-On! Style, like, group of cute girls doing cute things anime, only this time they're, like, in a post-apocalyptic world where they're all in the army, but they're in kind of like a base in a town that is really off the beaten path, so they're kind of just fucking around and not doing much. They have a mech, but it doesn't work. And the one person joined the army because she heard she could get free lessons on how to play an instrument, so it's a music anime as well. It's cute. It's fine.
Yay.
Nice. I'm glad that you are, you know, watching more anime and having fun with it. My life has kind of been like an anime this week in the sense that, well, it's
I'm in the sense again.
I was about to do a segue because I'm going to talk about Valheim, but I was going to do a segue because one of the people I play Valheim with compared it to a type of anime where you, like, wake up one day and you're, like, in the medieval times and you have a harem.
Oh, an isekai.
Yeah, an isekai. That's the segue I was going to go with. Apparently, it's a popular genre. I mean, you don't have to wake up in What is explained to me is just like anything where you wake up in a different time period than your own and like have to live there. It's
most people die to get there. At least that was, I believe, how it happened with ReZero and Konosuba.
Is that what Not happened sure. in a, like, isn't that the new Wonder Woman arc where she like kind of wakes up and then, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, kind of.
You know, kind of stuff going on.
So that's kind of what happened to me. I've died and I've gone to Valheim. This is kind of my Chad moment where I'm, you know, playing a video game that came out 3 months ago and was big 3 months ago. And I started playing last weekend. And
get out of my level. It would have been 3 years ago.
And yeah, I put in multiple 10-hour days this week, destroying, terraforming, terraforming forests and building bases and fighting deer gods. And, it's been a lot of fun. It's kind of like a Rust style game where it's like an open world multiplayer, crafting survival game, except it's all Viking themed. Honestly, more than anything, is just like reminds me of Minecraft because I will just like zone out and build structures for like 2 hours and won't even realize that 2 hours have gone by, and just like sit in a Discord call with friends and do that. And Valheim has been really fun. Alex, I know you've played a little bit. I don't know if you've played more since when we played together.
Yeah, I hopped in this morning for a couple hours, but it's remarkable how this game has taken over at least our Discord server, which is like about like I don't know 6 or 7 active people every day. But every time I've checked in the last like week, there is somebody online playing Valheim, like to the point where like Jean-Luc I think tweeted at like 4 a.m. last night or something, and was like, "I'm gonna play 30 hours of Valheim this weekend," and I was like, "Jean-Luc, I was playing with you like 6 hours." Like, I wake up in the morning and there's a tweet from Jean-Luc like 2 hours ago being like, "Man, I love Valheim." And I'm like, shit, that is a lot. Like our friend Rio was sort of late to it because
oh my God.
But I think he's had it for like 2 or 3 days and he's the highest level of anyone. I don't think he's slept. If he has, it's been not a lot. Like this game is.
To me, we have a bunch of friends who live in different time zones. And so one of our friends woke up on his Saturday morning, which was our Friday night, and four of us were playing Valheim, and he just proceeded to spend the next 2 hours trying to get us to go to sleep while we continued to play Valheim. And at the end of that 2 hours, I was the only one who listened, and everyone else just continued to play Valheim. It's just like, I don't know if I've been in a game this deep since like PUBG came out, and I was doing like 8 hour sessions at a time. Like even Apex, like I have like over 1,000 hours in Apex Legends at this point. We've played it a lot during the pandemic, but it's largely been in like, oh, we just played it for a year and a half in like, you know, 2 to 5 hour sessions at a time with, you know, occasionally a very degenerate session. But Valheim is like every time I boot it up, I just played it for like between 6 and 10 hours straight. And I haven't played it today because I sort of told myself that I have to do a cleanse from playing video games after what I did to myself this week. But I feel like that cleanse is going to end in a couple hours.
Yeah, Real Ming and Ryan had no such cleanse today. I got on at like 1 o'clock and I was like, oh, how long have you guys been on? They're like 9:30. And I did the math of like, wait, I went to bed, you guys were still playing. I wake up, you guys, like, I think they slept, but
again. I don't know how. I went to bed at like 3 a.m. last night, and I slept until 2:30 because part of that is like, I've just not been sleeping enough throughout the entire week. So I have no idea how other people are able to pull it off. I really am like feeling like an old man because I just.
Fuck you.
I can't. Well, no, it just like I can't. Stay up super late without, you know, feeling terrible unless I sleep all the way into the mid-afternoon. I can't do what I did in college, which was play PUBG until 6 a.m. and then go to class and just like everything be normal until I went to sleep the next night.
It's remarkable because it's only been around a week, but like I've definitely played the least of anyone Valheim. I mean, Jean-Luc bought me the game like 2 days ago or something, but like every time I come in, I'm just like, They're playing like chess, like 5 dimensions higher than I am, kind of thing. Or I get there and I'm like, oh, cool, what's going on? They're like the bridge, or like the trolls, or the honey, and it's like, what is even going on? So it's I'm a little lost still, but I'm looking forward to keep on Valheiming.
As someone with like 10,000 better things to do, the idea of wasting that much time on a video game upsets me so much.
The thing is that it's all I want to do in my free time is like spend time with my friends and do something that I enjoy. And Valheim, like, even though it's like obviously not real, it has that effect where after playing Valheim for, you know, however many hours, I feel like I've accomplished something in a way that like almost nothing else feels that way in my life. But I can like log into Valheim and play it and like hang out with my friends for a long time. And then at the end of it be like, yep, we built another forward operating base and we found the merchant and we killed three trolls and did a dungeon. And those are all the things that I accomplished. And it feels good to accomplish those things. So I will not apologize for playing a lot of Valheim.
Yeah, I mean, if it makes you happy, I'm not going to tell you to stop. And it's funny, like, I do stuff, but I don't ever feel accomplished from...
Aww.
You should. You do things that are actually productive, that aren't, like...
I know, but it
playing
it,
video games productive.
I
don't know.
I feel like the thing about the stuff you do, Chad, is, like, you have crafts that are, like, never really done. Like, I mean, you'll write a book, but there's always, like, oh, I could do another editing pass, or I could do another thing, and it's such an interesting, like that sort of creative process of, like, okay, when is this done? And do I feel satisfied about it or do I not? Like, it's interesting listening to a lot of authors who don't like the stuff they're doing or like the stuff they're doing, but I don't know, like it's a very...
That's pretty good. Alrighty, back to the show.
So yeah, it's just my mind kind of frazzled there, but it's you're writing and it's like, are you ever really done writing, Chad? Do you ever feel like you finish like a book or a short story and you're like, yeah, this is good? Like, I mean, you just finished your Warhammer one, you're working on your on getting your latest book published. How is that?
So I'm working on Toyland, which I wrote in 2016 and edited in around 2017, and I was like, okay, this went through six drafts, it's probably fine, I'll just read it and post it kind of thing. And of course it's not, like, it's fine. That there's I have issues with certain things that I just write a bit differently now than I did, you know, 3-4 years ago. So I don't know. It's so weird because I've been through it so many times. And part of it feels like it's fresh because it's been so long. I'm like, I don't remember writing half of this shit. And the other part is like, I definitely remember writing the other half of this shit, and I just don't care anymore. And I don't know. Like, I want to like partly hype it up because I'm going to be releasing it within the next couple of weeks and I want people to buy it. But I'm also just like so fucking over it that it feels like work and not fun.
Right. And I mean, especially, yeah, like you were done that. Well, not done that book, but like 2016 and it's what, 5 years later. You know these characters, you know this book, and it's like, just get it out of here. Let me go on to the next one. I have new ideas kind of stuff.
Kinda, and I feel like I owe it to anybody that's going to buy it to give it another read, just partly to look for typos and stuff, but also there's just some sentences where it's like, oh, this is a really clunky sentence, no one wants to read that, I can fix this in like 2 seconds, so I do. And then that sentence after, it's like, oh, well, I could probably fix this sentence too, I mean, just so it all makes sense, and then all of a sudden you're rewriting entire paragraphs. At one point, I was probably happy with it, or at least I was done with it, and I'm not unhappy with it. I have certain short stories I'm really happy with. Some of the ones in Dreamscape are, I think, pretty good. Most of them, though, like I could go back and be like, oh, there's still things to fix. It's nothing. Most things are never done. It's just I get sick of working on them.
Well, and see, like, that's the sort of the thing. Like, the shorter it is, obviously, the more you can feel like, okay, this is good and everything. Or, like, the more you can move on with it. I mean, like, with the articles I write, well, I mean, I don't know. It's... When I'm done, it's like, hey, I look at how much I'm getting paid for it, and then I look at how much time I put into it, and I'm like, okay, this is good enough. This is it. Like, there's very few things that I'm, like, writing and then being like, okay, well, I should add more and add more and add more, unless it's, like, you know, a feature or something I really care about.
Mm-hmm. And for me, it's less about adding more and more about fixing what I've got and reducing it down. Like, I've cut another, like, 400 words out of Toyland so far, which Damn. Isn't a lot. Out of, you know, it's a 65,000 word book, but it is a page and a half or something, right? Like it's an amount. And most of that is just taking sentences or paragraphs that are worded a little awkwardly or just too wordy and slimming them down or be like, oh man, like kind of describe the same thing twice here. I could just cut two of these sentences and it's, you don't lose anything. I might as well just do it.
Right.
So it will be a better book when it goes up. And it's a fun book, but it's also stupid and weird. So, you know, I've not high hopes that it's going to see a lot of love.
I mean, I'll love it. Well, but buy a copy and add it to my bookshelf of Chad books.
Yeah, I plan on doing the same thing.
It'll be the trio so far, at least. Yeah, I mean,
when you become a successful author, this will be like one of the rare, you know, like when bands have like the rare demos from early in their career. That's what Boyland will be for you.
That'd be cool. I would like to be a successful author, but then I've also been on the internet, and being successful means like painting this target on your back, and then people might find this podcast. And I don't know if I'm ready for that.
I think being successful and then also getting off of social media is a good 1-2 punch. I think.
Yeah,
I think
as soon as you become successful, the first thing you do is hire someone to tweet for you and just never look at social media again.
Yeah, yeah. Like hire them to tweet and don't even like you hire them and they'd be like, never talk to me again. I'll keep sending you checks monthly.
Don't tell me what people are saying about me online. Don't tell me run by me what you're posting, but do not tell me what's happening online. Don't tell me what I'm trending. Yeah. Don't tell me what people think of what I put out there.
Yeah.
That is the way to go, I think.
At the very least, people would be like, hey, Tom King, you should listen to this podcast. And then they'll just like,
oh my gosh,
send an episode where I'm like, man, that guy sucks, huh? Which it could be mini episodes. We say that a lot. I'm sorry, Tom King.
Well, I mean, we also have ones where early on we are praising him and everything. But I would I would just love the world where you're a successful author and we book you like on like a panel that Tom King's also on, and like you guys meet and like maybe he's never heard of the podcast, maybe he doesn't know, but you know what you've said about Tom King, and then you're sitting right next. Oh, this is that would just be that would just be wonderful.
Hey, I can be professional. I would play nice if that were the case, nope. Right? And I would be like, hey, you know what was great, Mr. Miracle, and that episode where they went on a double date.
Yeah,
issue.
Yeah,
it's like I got some things. Oh, the first couple issues of Heroes in Crisis, I was on board.
When we were on board till issue like 5, we were like, nah, he's gonna turn it around. Yeah, he's gonna. Tom King can turn this one around. And John looks like, guys, this book has been shit since issue 1. We're like, John, that doesn't make any sense. Why would we still be reading it?
Come on. You guys have never been known to stick with a bad comic like past the point it gets bad.
Right, Rat Queens.
Yeah,
right.
You guys just love nothing more than dropping comics that make you angry.
It's true. It's true. That's why I only read one comic a week.
What's really funny about that is I've stuck with really shitty comics for a long time, and then like something like Kanto that kind of gets mediocre. But I'm done with
you're
this.
Like, fuck that shit. I'm out. There's a new Kanto miniseries, by the way. None of us are reading it.
Yeah, it's one of those things that with so many books coming out, and like Chad said, like things that like are bad or things that are good, and Kanto's like. Yeah, I've experienced more than enough Kanto. I like parts of it, didn't like other parts of it, but you know what? I feel closure with Kanto. I don't need more.
Mm-hmm.
It's good.
But if Tom King started writing Batman again,
You know, anything Tom King writes, I'll be there. I'll be there. And I mean, so far, I think the only series of his that I haven't finished recently has been that one he did where he was all like,
it's not called Adam Strange, but.
Strange Adventures. Yeah. But I did read 6 issues of that book, which is more more than anyone. Well, not anyone, I guess. But yeah, did not jive with me.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, the thing is there are so many good comics that come out that like I'd rather invest my time there.
Yeah.
I don't know, and I think I think that we've been on a really good run of like lots of weeks in North comics. Like obviously. We'll get to some of the not so great stuff, but there was a lot of good stuff this week. And I think we're at the point where we can transition to some of that. The standout for me, was a new number one, from someone who is quickly becoming one of my favorite contemporary comic book writers, which is The Many Deaths of Layla Starr. I should have written down who published this, but I think it's a Boom book.
Before there was Ram Z, there was Ram V. I've been sitting on that one for like 4 fucking days.
Oh.
F- 4 months after we start reading Ram V comics, Chad finally comes up with it. Perfect. But yeah, this is a book by Ram V and Felipe Andrade, that's debuted this week. And it's honestly just like a fantastic debut issue. I assume both of you got around to reading this.
Yeah, I sure did.
Yeah. Well, what did you guys think of this new number one, this new series?
A really cool like look at like the sort of the mythologies of like I'm guessing, you know, India kind of area, kind of stuff, and like looking at death and all these characters, gorgeous art, and the concept of the book is that death gets fired, like the god of death gets fired because there is a child born who is going to grant humanity sort of eternal life, kind of thing, sort of like a savior figure. And you know, death's not happy, and it's handled in such like a, sorry man, you know, there's layoffs, that things happen, you're obsolete, we want to make sure we fire you before this person gets the powers, so you know, we don't have redundancies.
There's such an interesting tonal shift between the opening pages of this book, which are like very somber, very purple prosy in a way that works. And then when it introduces the death character and sort of becomes like this ironic comedy about her getting fired from her job, which she, of course, you know, how do you fire death? there's a bunch of really funny lines, and the whole like interaction and setup is just like really well done comedy. And then it transitions back into that more somber tone when she, you know, ends up in the human body, and decides she's going to kill the baby that, is going to grant people eternal life so that they'll give her job back.
She's going after the person who's taking her job, like from like a, technically that's what's happening, but at the same time she's going to kill a baby.
Yeah.
And it's wonderful.
Yeah.
It's such a great like concept, because the concept is really strange, and then by the end it's like, so here's our concept and now it's going to get strange. You're like, but we started at strange. What are you talking about? Like,
help.
It's very like Neil Gaiman-esque too, as far as how he's handling like this bureaucracy of the afterlife and the deities and stuff, and it making things seem so almost like mundane and boring. And I don't know, it's what I expect out of him, right? And so to see another author pulling that off really well is fantastic, because we always could use more of that.
Yeah.
It also just, it's absolutely fucking stunning. Felipe Andrade's art is really good, is like really good. Like there's like a rugged feel to it, lots of line work, but also the color palette of this issue is just so lush. Like there's just a lot of like purples and like dark blues when there are things going on with death, and then a lot of like bright oranges and other colors. But the whole thing, most of the issue, like is shaded in like a purple twilight kind of color, and it sort of like takes place at like that time of night, and it just looks really, really beautiful. Just like every single page, there's like a really just at least once like just absolutely stunning panel on it.
Yeah.
That really, like, knocked me over, bowled me over, you know?
Yeah.
My one thing with it, and this isn't, like, a complaint, it's more of a, boy, they kind of screwed death over in a couple ways, because they're like, we'll give you a human body, and you get to experience being a human. But then they threw her, and she kind of asked for this, but they threw her in a body that was, like, basically in her, you know, late teens, early 20s, right? Like, she missed growing up in that regard. And, like, you don't get to be a human without, like, the full experience.
Right.
Granted, she was going to go murder a child, so I don't think that mattered to her, but it was something that kind of struck me as like, wow, they kind of did her dirty. Like,
yeah,
it was funny, because like, I don't know, there could have been, it wouldn't work. The story would not work if they didn't do that, but it struck me as like, oh, afterlife's kind of mean in a couple ways.
Isn't that what she asked for, though? Like that,
she asked to be placed close to the baby.
Okay. Yeah.
Obviously, if she had been a newborn next to a newborn, well, that would have been really funny, because that would have been some Rugrats shit. Like, I'm hilarious. A baby, and I'm going to kill this baby.
Yeah. And then, it would have been a completely different series of, like, them growing up and, like, maybe being friends and stuff, and then being like, I have to kill you now. And but instead, she gets hit by a truck, and then she wakes up 8 years later in a different body, and it's like, ah. It's
the same body.
Is it the same? How is it the same body 8 years later?
Is this the many deaths of Layla Starr?
Yeah.
I'm guessing she's going to die multiple times.
I didn't read the title of this book, but other than that, I...
Because Layla Starr is the girl who commits suicide at the beginning.
Yeah, yeah.
And then she takes her body, and presumably that will come back, or maybe it won't. Like,
so
maybe this is just death now.
But. I was going to say it kind of reminded me of like some body swap comics, but it's not really a body swap because she's in the same body again. So, I mean, the original body swap, but yeah.
No, this was a really standout issue. I really, really dug this. So I'm excited for more.
Remvi feels like a guy who's like, I mean, he's doing a lot of DC stuff. He feels like a guy who's going to be leaving DC soon to do Image, or maybe he'll be like, I'm going to Marvel now. Or,
he kind of has his hands in a bunch of different pies, right? Because he's got Swamp Thing and Catwoman at DC.
Yeah,
he's writing this for Boom, and he had that graphic novel Blue and Gold come out last year at Image. So definitely feels like he's juggling a lot of projects, but.
He's fucking killing it, though.
I know, they're all really strong. I mean, even this issue of Catwoman, I think we were all a little bit tepid, I guess, on the last issue, on issue 29. But I thought that this issue was a really major improvement over that. And maybe just, like, less set up for the plot of this arc, less sort of, like, I don't feel like I'm left out to dry with, like, information that I would have gotten if I'd read the previous arc. But it just feels like this issue just felt like it actually had a flow, where the last issue just felt like we were going from like thing to thing to thing to thing, and there was no sort of connective tissue to it. This issue is a lot slower. It's a lot more interested in like people talking to each other more, and less, you know, just big event happens every three pages. And I thought that, you know, when you get to do that, it thrives a lot more. Like even the action scene towards the end where she goes into the breaks into those trucks, some of the like monologuing is a little bit imposing, and like some of it is a little bit unnecessary, but I think that those pages are like really saved by, I think it's Fernando Blanco is the artist, where you really can just ignore the writing and it just looks great, and there's a lot of like really great visual storytelling going on there, and it's lettered in such a way that, you know, it's not imposing on the action that's happening on the page. You can just follow it, and I mean, I read the text, but you can sort of follow it without reading the text, which is just sort of like descriptive, and that's like a really good like that's like an example of like an artist and a letterer working really well together, I guess. But this issue on a whole, like that aside, I thought was a little rocky. But everything else in this was, I felt, really, really strong.
I swear to God, DC has like a you have to have this many words per comic.
I know,
whether you need them or not. Like,
it really feels like that because it also is just like in books like this, it just feels out of character too. Like it feels like it comes out of nowhere. It's not, you know, like, you know, I don't know. I can't think of a good example off the top of my head, but it's not like the whole thing is running with monologue. It's like there's this one section where there's a bunch of monologuing where it really feels like you say, like if you don't hit this number of words, you're not getting paid or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if that's a real thing, but it definitely feels that. I feel like it's probably more of a, like, not trusting the reader more than anything else to follow everything that's happening or remembering.
Yeah. I think writers get intimidated writing these established characters that have been around for all these years, and they're like, they have a lot to live up to, as opposed to like, hey, I'm writing my own Image or Boom book that is, I know the story, I know how I want to handle this, and there's like, you know, there's way less intimidation in that, which is why, you know, I think we see a lot of writers who go from their own creator-owned to something like DC and Marvel, and it's like, what happened? What happened? And you know, a lot of them are also fans of the stuff, so they're trying extra hard to make it right, maybe overthink it there, but yeah, I thought it was an okay issue with a few too many words, but I'm a Rem V fan, so I will be back for issue 3.
Yeah, I think Rem V doesn't really fall into that fully. I mean, I think Swamp Thing is a lot stronger than this, but Swamp Thing's also a mini. This is an ongoing that he might be on for God knows how long. So, I don't know. But this is, I thought this was pretty good, and like, there's room to grow here, but it's definitely something that I'm sticking with, because it's, you know, it's definitely a cut above. And I think that this is true of basically all of the new DC books that I've read is that even the ones that are bad are still a cut above where DC comics were a year ago, which is not necessarily something I thought I'd be saying coming out of Future State, but I'm really glad.
I did not have high hopes for Future State. I mean, we read all the one shots, and I think I only like two of them overall.
Yeah, two or three.
But it's nice seeing these new creators on these books and killing it. And, you know, some old creators or established ones like Tom Taylor.
Like Tom Taylor on Nightwing, which was another standout issue for me this week, honestly. Like, between Nightwing and the Many Deaths of Layla Starr, if you asked me to pick what my favorite issue of the week was, I don't know that I could tell you without spending some more time thinking about it. Because I absolutely...
Layla Starr, because it was more interesting.
That's fair.
My gut reaction, but Nightwing was good. I was a little leery when you're like, hey, you should read Nightwing, and I'm like, oh man, I don't give a fuck about Nightwing. And I gotta read two issues of Nightwing to get caught up.
it was a big ask, Chad. I'm glad you pulled
through. I even told you you could skip the last issue, and you didn't.
Well, it's funny, because the last issue was basically like, hey, did you know Nightwing's parents are dead? I was like, yeah.
Yeah.
Yes, I did.
And there's not one really great scene where he reads I think it's a great scene where he reads the letter from Alfred, but yes.
You know what I really liked about the letter from Alfred is it was whoever did the lettering did a great job, because it was like that cursive stuff, but it was really legible cursive.
Yes.
Where sometimes you read these like, oh, we're going to do cursive mimic handwriting. We're going to do like the shittiest cursive font we can find. Have fun deciphering this, everybody.
It's more time spent reading, therefore more value. Yay.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Tom Taylor is a fantastic writer.
Yeah, no, this issue was great. It really balances the sort of like really lighthearted superhero stuff that like Nightwing, you know, he's not Batman, but he is generally a somewhat serious character. So having him get his wallet stolen by a bunch of kids, and then Barbara texting, I guess there's a Bat Family group chat.
Which is great.
It's just like, of course there is. Like, these people are, you know, I mean, the Bat Family is like an esoteric marketing term, but like, yeah, the characters are family to one another. And the fact that there's that group chat is just like such a fun little detail. And it's basically only relevant for like a couple panels, but it's just so nice to see those kinds of things make their way into these comics where even this overarching plot isn't like, oh, it's like a big, massive, you know, world-ending threat, or it's obviously more localized to Bloodhaven, but even like in that smaller scale, there's moments for those even smaller scale moments.
Yeah, and I mean, like, even the big villain, like, it's the daughter of the guy who killed Dick Grayson's parents. Like, it's a very personal, like, relationship-focused comic so far, and, you know, even in the villains and stuff. And Dick Grayson's always been sort of, like, looked at as sort of, like, the heart and soul of the DC universe. Like, he's the heart. He's sort of what, you know, Batman sort of strives to be or, like, needs in his life, and everyone kind of, like, he's this pure guy. And now he's a billionaire, and he's like, shit, like, I can do so much, but where do I start kind of thing? And, like, Bruce Wayne, Batman, was a billionaire for so long, and he did it, but, like, he didn't do enough, obviously, and stuff like that, and how he's trying to help people out, and how he buys pizza for all these people, then puts them up in the hotel, and then when that guy dies, I was quite sad there.
Yeah, the homeless father when he gets killed in the alley, yeah. And it sort of makes sense that Dick would be that character where when he finds himself in possession of a fortune, that he's the one that is like trying to put it to use. But it's, you know, obviously there's so much else going on.
The, because I feel like the great thing about this is how they're trying to basically, you know, there's Dick Grayson as Nightwing and then there's Batman, and they're foils to each other. Whereas like Batman's like, I'm going to use my wealth so I can be Batman all the time. And then, Grayson's like, shit, I'm gonna use my wealth to actually help everybody, and then I won't be Nightwing as much. Like, like that seems to be his goal, right? Yeah. And that light and dark kind of aspect to it, you know, this comparison between these two is really, really cool and really strong. And it's like, why haven't we seen this before? This is actually like really good comic book writing.
Yeah. I also just love that moment in the park when the dad and his son come up to Nightwing and Barbara, or Dick and Barbara.
Yeah.
And ask for money, and Dick just like has that there's like that moment, and it's like it's almost like this really corny moment where there's like the little light bulb illustration next to it. And then he's like, wait, I'm a billionaire, I can end homelessness question?
Yeah, it's such like, a genuine
alleviate suffering in like a real way, and it
yeah,
it's a great one. I also just love that like Nightwing's the comic is called Nightwing, but I love that it is like Dick and Babs together. It is like it is basically they're basically like two headliners in this. It's not just like he's the focus, obviously, but Barbara plays a big role in this as well. And I think that that's fantastic. Like I think that like Tom Taylor has a really really good handle on their relationship.
And this is what I want to see with superheroes, like just like the fact, you know, people who are trying to do good, and it's just like there we go, bam, you nailed the essence, the ethos of like superheroes here, Tom King. And you know, we're two issues in.
Tom Taylor.
Oh my, I'm sorry, Mr. King. Oh my goodness. I mean, I'm sorry, Mr. I don't know, Tom. I'm sorry. But yeah, it's really good. And the art by Bruno Redondo, it's very clean, and it works really well with the colors. It's got this bright pop. It feels very classic, and it feels very sort of fast, and it's a joy of a book.
It's like DC house style that actually has personality.
That's a good way to put it.
Like, yeah.
The characters are drawn in like exaggerated ways. It's not like it looks like, you know, like it looks like most DC books on the surface, but you know, when you actually read it, it's like, there's like really exaggerated facial expressions. There's like exaggerated body language and that stuff that feels very like Silver Age comic booky in a way.
Yeah, it's like someone drawing a Silver Age comic today with like, you know, the new inking, new coloring techniques, that sort of stuff going on. And whenever there's DC house style thrown out, it normally comes along with like this gritty sort of dark scowling story or whatever, or like, and that kind of stuff. And that's just not here. And I mean, sure, there's dark moments and stuff, but like it's just handled really well by Taylor and Redondo.
It is. It's a great comic. I'm really this is another one that I'm like really fucking excited about.
Yeah.
There's another, you know, I guess it's kind of a fake number one. I don't know that Old Guard Tales Through Time is like, this is like number 15 or some shit, because this thing gets relaunched whenever there's a new story. But this is it's more in the Old Guard universe, but it's an anthology series. And this first issue is a normal size issue and just has two stories in it, which feels like the way to do these instead of, you know, putting out an anthology with like 30 pages and five stories in it. This one actually has a couple stories that really get the chance to breathe. Did the two of you guys get around to this one?
Yeah, it was good too. I it's kind of nice. Like, it's kind of funny. Like, it starts off and it's like, for those that care, this takes place between this arc and this arc. And it's like, I guess I don't care. I like these characters. I know who they are well enough. And honestly, like some of these like quick snapshot stories with them, they're just nice. Like the one with like, this is my axe and it's the original axe. So it's like, yeah, but you've replaced everything. Just, I don't give a shit. It's still the original axe. Like, I don't know. It's just a fun little piece of character writing that I think is executed really well.
It's like the perfect one of these, right? Cause it's not something that would necessarily fit in a normal issue of the Old Guard. Like unless you were like doing a whole thing where it's like, oh, it's a six issue story about the axe or whatever. But
yeah,
this feels like the right amount of time to spend on her axe. it feels like it works because of that. And then the second story is kind of a similar thing, right? With Nikki and I don't remember his boyfriend's name. Yusuf? Okay. With them at a nightclub in, I guess, not quite Nazi Germany, I think, is the implication. But it is like another sort of small...
I can't believe it's not Nazi Germany.
Well, I mean, it's like... I guess it technically is Nazi Germany. I just don't know that Hitler has come to power yet. I don't remember.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember if there is a date there. There might be, and I might just be making myself sound like an idiot for not noticing that. But it's another one of those moments where, like, it's not necessarily something that would fit in like a normal issue, but it is still like valuable characterization about these two people. And it's like a really nice, like one and done story about, you know, them like being good people who care about, you know, killing Nazis, and that rocks to me.
Yeah.
It's nice. These both feel like really good, like instances of these stories where they're like, just like really relatively small scale, kind of get away from the bigger scale of the main Old Guard series, And they both like really excel at that.
Yep.
I especially love the second one with Joseph and Nikki, but they're both really, really strong. Big fan of this. Excited for more of these.
Yeah, same. Did you guys read Stray Dogs number 3? Are we still going through this?
Yes.
I did.
I don't know what to think about this one, because I feel like the impression is that the one dog gets shot at the end, and I feel like that almost takes away any of the mystery going on, because like these dogs could be misinterpreting literally everything because they're dogs and they're kind of dumb, and instead it's like, no, the guy's actually just a bad guy and apparently a serial killer. And I find that if it goes that route, like that's like the least interesting place this comic could go to me.
It seems like the mystery in this comic is whether there's a mystery or not, and I don't think there is. Like it just seems like a slow burn through. I think eventually the dogs are going to get out, or some of them are, and you know, maybe bring this guy to justice. But like I think he's just a bad guy.
Well, it's so weird too, because like either he is, and there's like no mystery or twist or whatever, or he's just like insanely overreacting. Also, like, I thought the whole crux of this is like obviously like he kills women and takes their dogs, but I thought like the whole point of it was like he likes the dogs, like he takes the dogs for a reason, and it's because like he likes having dogs. And it seems like such a stupid thing, like why would he shoot the Dalmatian for accidentally dialing 911? Like, it's like, it's such a weird, it's like, and I hate like these sort of like plot hole critiques a lot of the time, but like it just feels so weird that like, oh, the dog accidentally knocked out the dog. He doesn't know the dogs are sentient. He doesn't know that the dogs are like trying to call the cops on him, right?
Right.
It should just seem like, oh, they knocked the phone over and accidentally hit the emergency button. And then he takes the dog out back and shoots it. Unless he does know the dogs are sentient and are, you know, trying to figure out that he's murdered their owners and how he's done that or whatever. It's just so weird, and I just can never tell what the direction that I'm supposed to be, that this comic is supposed to be going in is.
Yeah.
And there's, like, the other problem is, like, none of the dogs have a strong enough characterization for me to care about them, like, as people, I guess.
No.
They're all, like, cookie cutter tropes, basically. And there's like nothing to them. A lot of them like sound very similar to each other in the way they're written. And it takes like what is potentially a strong concept, it feels like, and just like kind of squanders it, I guess. Like, I think there is something to, oh, the dogs have to solve the mystery and they can't remember what's going on. And if you do think there's something to that concept, you should read Hawkeye by Matt Fraction and David Aja. Because
I do like that book.
That is a thing that happens in that book.
Or, you know, maybe it'll turn out that all the women are fine and all the dogs are fine and dogs are just silly creatures. Ha ha ha. That's the thing.
I feel like that's worse.
It is, but you know,
that's gotta be worse.
We're almost done. It's a mini series, so
yeah, there's 2 issues left after this one.
Like, what has happened so far? In this dog,
like,
book.
Fucking nothing is the thing.
they found out that the guy killed their owners, and every issue they convince more dogs that the guy killed their owners.
And every issue more readers jump off as more dogs jump on. So there's always
not dogs. Us. We'll read it until the end. For
yeah, sure. Miniseries are such dangerous things, because it's like, oh yeah, I hated the first issue, but there's only 4 more issues, and you know, sure. But the guys, that's 4 months. That's 4 months of us thinking about these books. That's 4 months of like, oh, all right, I guess it's time to do it. And sure, it's not
The thing is, I didn't hate the first issue. I was like, oh, this could be an interesting concept. And I know this writer from his other works. Like, he has the capabilities to tell a good story. It just, I feel like he's mishandling this. Like, it there's a thing here, and I don't know what I'm supposed to feel like and what I'm supposed to care about, right? Like, I don't know what the thesis of this book is, and we're over, you know, over halfway through.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a real problem.
And then I read Ultra Mega number 2. I know, Jean-Luc, you said you skimmed
it. I skimmed it. I think it looks great, and I got the sense that I wasn't going to read it because I really didn't like the first issue, but then we kept pushing, we pushed the recording time back, and I was like, well, I guess I'm not an excuse anymore. I sort of skimmed some of it, and it seems like it actually went in something of an interesting direction in terms of like the characterization. And so I might go back and like actually read it, but I don't really have like fully formed thoughts on it.
I'm not sure. Like, my issue with this is that the first issue, which was oversized to the max,
yeah,
is basically just a prologue.
Yeah, it doesn't matter. It's like a totally
time
skip.
It doesn't matter. It's a time, and it's like, well, why the fuck do it then? And I actually enjoyed the first issue to some extent. Like, I think there was some really fun stuff there, but it feels like somewhat inconsequential. Like, when you skip ahead this far, and it's like, hey, the world's like this. Like, you could just start with this issue, and I don't think you'd miss anything.
Yeah.
And if you're buying the comics, I don't know, that feels kind of rude. The socio-political stuff's fairly interesting. The new character's kind of fun. He reminds me of, I want to say it's Ed from Cowboy Bebop, but maybe a bit dumber. But the things going on are, they're fine. I like the artwork a lot. I think the action stuff that's here is really fun. It is still, like, extremely anime-inspired and not maybe always in the best ways as far as some of the overreacting character moments. Like, page 23 is, like, straight out of an anime in a way that it's like, yeah, I don't really want, like, that level of anime and anything but anime.
Yeah.
But one of my problems, too, is, like, by the end, they're, like, talking about, you know, the next coming arcs. Like, there's going to be more than one. And I think they're all going to be 50 pages. And there's a certain level of, like, do I care enough about this to keep going? Because this is asking a lot more out of me than most comics by being literally twice the size. At the same time, at least there's, like, lots of pages without text on it. Like, it knows how to pace an issue. Whether you like it or not is one thing, but at least it can let things breathe.
Yep.
So that's good. I thought the ending was pretty strong to this as far as really showcasing, like, the shit situation a lot of these people are in and, like, the gangs that have taken over and whatnot. So, I don't know. There's good stuff here, and then there's some kind of weird mishandly stuff here. Then there's just anime stuff here, and it's hard to tell, like, how balanced all of that is.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I'm definitely going to go back to it and read this issue. And we'll, I don't know. It seems like one of those sort of like wait and see type things where, but I don't know how long I want to wait. But yeah, I'm glad you, Alex, did you read it? Do you have thoughts?
No, I didn't read it and I'm probably not going to. So
that's fair.
Yep.
One thing you did read.
Oh,
probably shouldn't have.
Yeah.
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 Was the widely awaited, critically acclaimed crossover between Batman and Fortnite.
So I don't want to talk too long about the issue. I just want to talk about one review we found about the issue.
Oh yeah.
Because we read this review before we read the issue.
We were fucking lied to.
And this review gave, you know, it gave like an 8.5 out of 10, and it says that Batman loses his voice like two pages in and doesn't talk for the whole issue. And, you know, me and Jean-Luc reading a lot of Batman were like, sick. Batman's not going to talk. You know, maybe it'll be action. Maybe they'll find some cool way to do it. That's wonderful. Lo and behold, we get into the book and we start assigning voices because we're, you know, we're talking back and forth. And I get the voice of Batman's inner monologue, which is the entire flipping book, every page, wall-to-wall text, and it's Batman, and he's got this Italian accent for some reason, because, like, picked an Italian accent, and yeah, it's a really silly book. It's Batman going into the Fortnite world and being like, why are these people fighting? Why are they not communicating with me? I'm going to try to use sign language, but wait, I've lost my memory. But who's this girl? Oh my god, we have a connection. This cat woman, and as the zone closes around us, I wonder, why are we fighting each other only to get destroyed by this great zone? And maybe, wait a minute, maybe it's kill or be killed, maybe it's defeat or be defeated, and then that's the cliffhanger, and it's like, huh, it's a lot of Batman talk, and I feel cheated.
Yep, I was told that Batman would not talk, and then he talked to himself the whole fucking issue, so it was not good.
No.
But if you buy it, you get a code for a cool skin in Fortnite.
And issue 3, he teams up with Snake Eyes from G.I. Joe. So.
Why are they advertising that for issue 3? What about issue 2?
I just saw somewhere that issue 3 thing. I don't know.
Yeah, at the end of Batman Fortnite 0.1, there's like an ad for issue 3. It's. Yeah.
They'll they'll get to the issue two tease eventually. Maybe like issue five, they'll be like, check out issue
I'm
two.
Not, well, you know what? I'm not going to read any more of it. I'm
see, I see you say that, but I feel like, you know, it'll be Thursday and you're not going to be doing any work and you've been playing Valheim for 48 hours
straight.
This
is not going to be a Rorschach number 7 situation where you bully me into reading it.
I don't know. I still think that was a fantastic comment.
That is not going to happen. Yeah, I mean, there's a couple more books. There's Luna number 3, which came out this week. Where are you guys at on Luna? I'm kind of curious after this issue.
Go on, Alex.
No, I don't really have a fully formed thought, so go ahead.
It was a weird, like, hey, we're going to have sex, but she's going to have a vision and get, like, exposition, but she's kind of high, so the exposition doesn't totally make a lot of sense, and, I don't know, ancient gods and chains, and I stopped caring, like, really quickly on, and I was like, well, how long can this go on before the plot takes off again? And it went on the whole fucking issue. It was 20 pages of shit, and I did not like any of it.
Yeah, so she goes into this vision and where she has sex with somebody else while she's high and having sex with somebody, and then she has this vision where she's having sex with someone else. And I don't know, do people talk that much while they're having sex? Like,
oh yeah, yeah, it's exposition the whole time.
I just couldn't get that thought out of my head the whole time. It's like all of this exposition dump is happening while they're just fucking, and it's just. I don't know. I just thought.
I mean, it's better than if they were just standing there, being like static.
I mean, it looked a bit more dynamic. Like, it was pretty hot. Like, I can't lie about that part. But like,
enough animals.
No. All right, we're done with Luna number 3.
Yeah. I'm not even gonna say what else I was doing.
We're done with
that one. All right.
I meant to say furries.
Close the book on that one. I think that this issue of Radiant Black actually convinced me this book might be good.
Kyle Higgins, baby.
I don't know if, Alex, you read it, I take it then?
I did read a Radiant Black number 3.
Yeah, I thought this was like a really strong blend of like him, you know, getting the vibes back, you know, like sort of.
He wrote more for his book than he did in the last 5 years. So
yeah, and good for him. I like that it's sort of like, you know, it's like the classic superhero story, like, oh, he gets superpowers and it inspires him to do more with his life. But I like loved all the time. I love the whole first half of the issue or so is him like looking at this short story he read that apparently people liked and was like promising, and him just being like, this fucking sucks. And I'm like, you're right. That did. I read it that. It's there in the issue to be read. It sucked. But then, like, the whole thing is, like, him, like, sitting with it and trying to figure out what it is that's interesting about it. And there's obviously, like, the whole superhero angle going on sort of in the background for the first half of this issue.
Yeah.
But all of his internal monologue where he's just, like, thinking about it, trying to figure out what he's going to write about. And then he sort of, like, has the breakthrough. And I love that, like, I just really enjoyed that, like, bit for his character. And then he goes and, like, you know, he's a superhero. He goes and helps someone change.
He tries. Well, he goes to try to change a tire. Yeah. And he doesn't know how to do it. Because, you know, being a superhero doesn't magically make you good at, like, around the house or around, you know, the car job. So then he ends up just lifting the car and flying them out. And he's wearing a cat scarf. And it's this wonderful image that just brings a smile to my face where the people in the car are just smiling. And he's like, flying and the car's there and he's just got this cat scarf and it's just going around his costume. I really enjoyed this issue.
Yeah. No, I thought I think this is the first time where like him being a writer actually felt consequential.
Well, and then there was a quote that I'm like, this is Chad, and it says, so much for a writing day, and he's like, better luck next time. just hearing stories of Chad where you're like, you know, I'm gonna write today, and then you're like, oh, I can't write today, I gotta do this, or you know, stuff comes up.
Yeah.
Am I being attacked?
No.
No.
We're saying you have superpowers.
I didn't read it.
Yeah.
I don't plan on it either. There's enough comics to follow. Like, if I have a good excuse to not read one, I'm going to take it now.
That's
fair. That's understandable. I did really enjoy this issue. I mean, I liked parts of the last issue, but this issue I really, really liked. I'm convinced on this one, at least, for the time being.
Yeah.
Well, I believe that brings us to the end of another episode of the Comics Podcast.
Yeah, we did it.
We talked about a lot of comics, which is kind of the thing we do now. Talk about a lot of comics every episode. We will be back next week for episode number 250, which is going to be, as with all of our landmark episodes, not going to, except one where we talked, but it's, this one is not also not going to be about comics. What we decided to do, because like we've always talked about music a lot on this show, I feel like it's part of the show, so we each picked an album for the other three to listen to, and we're going to talk about those four albums on the next episode. Emily gave us a deadline and said that we had to pick our albums by Wednesday. She hasn't picked an album yet. Just putting that out there.
What are the albums that are confirmed so the listeners can
give a listen? The albums that are confirmed, I chose Act One, The Lake South, The River North, by The Deer Hunter. Chad chose Time One by Winter Sun.
I see a pattern so far. I keep going.
What's the pattern?
They both have one in the title.
True. And Alex broke that.
I did.
With Transcontinental Hustle by Gogol Bordello. So got a slate of albums that we're going to be talking about on the next issue, on the next episode. Alex tells me if there's time, there's some other stuff in the works, but we'll...
Yeah, we got some comic-related shenanigans planned for potentially the second half. Maybe, you know, if we have like 10 or 15 minutes at the end.
Yeah. But you can come back for that. It'll be in the same place as usual next week. Until then, you can find us on socials, Twitter and Facebook, and all those places that we use all the time but hate them every second we use them.
Damn.
You can find me on at Mountain Dew Liker. Alex is at Alex Hanziak. And Chad is at Anonymband. And Emily is at Mpandanata. Yeah, so you can check us out and online and come back for the next episode. And until then, goodbye.
See ya.
Take care, everybody.